For piano lovers out there, you'll have a real treat on Wednesday with the Live and Interactive series at Western Michigan University, which will present not one but two pianists, Lori Sims and Yulian Tay. They are professors of music at Western Michigan University. Both of you have given marvelous solo performances in years past on this series, but it must be so fun to play with another person.
It's really super fun when you're with somebody who is, you know, is just so easy to play with and such a great performer that it just kind of flies. We always have, I think, just a, there's many things that sort of that we can take for granted, which I know isn't very fair, but it's really fun. Yeah.
Yeah, we're having a great time. It's, you know, we've both played with a lot of people, but you're right. It is a very, very special relationship, mm-hmm. Because of our history, because of like our closeness and sort of similar understanding of music and how to play and definitely the me like being up close to when I sort of started out definitely helps and contributes to that. But yeah, we're having a fantastic time and it's very, very special and doesn't happen very often. So yeah, we're enjoying it tremendously.
Now, how did you come up with the pieces on the program?
Oh, well, the Debussy, it was funny. I think we discovered that we did it about 6 years ago. And I really, for some reason, I just really wanted to do the Blanc et Noir because I thought it was very beautiful. And I think what's interesting about it was that at the time, it seemed sort of more abstract for me. And it was before I did all of the preludes. And then coming back to it this time has been extra fun because I feel like I have so much better understanding of Debussy. I just never really played so much. I just think it's a magnificent piece. And then I think Julien.
Oh yeah, I had the idea for the Ravel, mm-hmm. The Rhapsody Espagnol. I like taught it and I've heard it like many times, and just I thought that would be kind of a nice barn burner piece.
It definitely
Rhapsody
is.
Rhapsody Espagnol by yeah. Maurice Ravel.
Yes.
Yes. And we were, I think we sort of switched horses. We thought, oh, maybe we would do kind of a French program. And then we were thinking about doing a Spanish program. And then I don't know what it was. Oh, the West Side Story came into play because, oh, I think because Bernstein has been, you know, last year was the 100th anniversary.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, I thought, oh, there must be a two-piano version of this. Or maybe I kind of knew that there was. And then I listened to this recording. And for about 3 days, I was just insane. And I said, no, we just have to do this. I just love this piece so much. And so that was how. And then Julien, then I didn't even know that she's a super big fan of West Side Story just so anyway. yes, she just was. And so it was, yeah, it was an easy sell. So but yeah, I think we actually had talked about so many pieces. There's like lots and lots of pieces that we would like to play. And then it turned out we remembered that there are lots of pieces that we actually have played, which is also kind of fun. So, but these are at least two of them are brand new. And one of them we just performed, I think, once.
Mm-hmm. So on Wednesday night, just to clarify, mm-hmm. Some pieces are... Some concerts with two pianists can be all on one piano, mm-hmm. and some can be two separate mm-hmm. pianos. What kind of concert is this?
This is a two-piano concert.
Two pianos. So you yeah. set up facing each other. And...
Well, we could, but we decided that actually...
We'll try it side by side.
Yeah, we asked ourselves, you know, what is that? Why do people do that? And I'm going to just say it right here. We are both not very tall. And so if we have stands up, we cannot see each other really very well. And so we're going to experiment with a kind of a new way of doing that. I mean, I think maybe also the reason that they put the back ends together of pianos, there was probably some idea that both pianists wanted to be seen. Mm-hmm. I'm perfectly fine with not being seen or...
Well, and we switch too.
We switch. We switch
You'll get a little bit.
Yeah.
From both of us.
But it's at least from the communication standpoint, and I just think it's just so perfect because that I can be so much more aware of just the very small things. And this is, in large part, actually really quite subtle music. Where you would like to be able and quiet, so you would really like not to have to give the you know, gigantic breath that can be heard, you know, to China.
The nose breath.
Yes, the nose breath from, or the big, huge head nod just to be able to play a really nice quiet. I think that there is some probably some optics that I might find annoying if I were watching. So we're going to open up a new.
It's going to be like a 176 key.
Yes.
Keyboard.
There you go.
Yeah. All in one.
Lots of piano.
Well, and we decided to try it. Why not? Yeah. And then if everybody hates it, just let us know.
Yeah. Well, our sounds are actually very balanced. That's another reason that I think that we can do that. We sort of have a similar volume capacity. Mm. So I'm hoping it's going to work out.
Oh, that's right. I guess even, you know, the way you play piano, have to adjust to a piano partner and change things.
Well,
here
and I have played with other even very, very close friends, and we couldn't put down one note together if we tried. and with you, Leanne, we could be blindfolded, and that's one of those things that's just super awesome that we just don't have to think about it too much, because I think we do sort of put down the keys about the same
speed.
Yeah. And that actually has nothing to do with, I think, any sort of pedagogical history. I just think that that's just how we both hear music or think about playing the piano. So
I am speaking with two musicians, performers, and professors of piano at Western Michigan University, Lori Sims and Julian Tay. And together on Wednesday night, they'll appear in the Dalton Center Recital Hall. Music begins at 7:30, but on this series, the live and interactive series, if you arrive at 7 o'clock, you'll hear a special interview or a chat, a little behind-the-scenes information from the performers themselves. So you might get some insight into the repertoire as well. We've already talked about the three pieces, Maurice Ravel's Rhapsody Espagnole, getting the concert started, then In White and Black. That's not how we say it here. It's En Blanc et Noir, but we usually say black and white.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. Yeah.
That's a piece by Debussy. And finally, the sensational symphonic dances of Leonard Bernstein. If we could talk a little about the Debussy, I happen to have a recording here I think is really beautiful. And I have to ask, I mean, my first thought is he referencing the colors of the keyboard basically in this?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Any other notes about the piece?
The first movement was dedicated to conductor Koussevitzky, and basically is referring to these who sort of like about those people who are disgraced. And I think Debussy felt sort of because he couldn't go to war and couldn't, he was quite patriotic, so he couldn't sort of help out. And so I think he's sort of expressing his own feeling of, not being enough. I don't know.
Inadequacy.
Yes.
In a way.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And then the second movement is interesting because it is sort of reminiscent of sort of like a death toll bell almost. Mm-hmm. Like it has this sort of like ostinato rhythm, like in the lower bass going on in the second piano. And that one is actually dedicated to this like lieutenant, a friend of his publisher who actually perished in the war. And so it's sort of a dedication to him. And interestingly enough, there's a quote in that movement that is drawing from Bach's, like one of Bach's hymns. And it's sort of the juxtaposition of, because then in the background, you also hear like hints of the Marseillaise. So he's sort of juxtaposing like German against the French, again, referencing the war. Mm-hmm. And also musically, that was always a little tricky with Debussy, or for Debussy, I guess, German music was, mm-hmm. was something that he was sort of against. So again, you find these, En Blanc et Noir, you find these two opposing forces in the second movement. And then the third movement is dedicated to Stravinsky.
Huh. And he knew him.
Yeah. And I think that one is something, Winter is Here. I think there, mm-hmm. the quote is something about mm-hmm. winter. So, I mean, it is quite bleak, actually, the piece. So, which maybe not everybody necessarily associates with Debussy. I think there's a lot of irony in there, and there's...
There is, but yeah. I've always started the piece or hit play on the radio and thought, oh, it's beautiful.
Oh, I was just going to say, yeah. This is the subtext is really important, and yet if you would just listen to it, it's standalone music. It's mm-hmm. not like you have to have the story or even that you may even understand how the story relates, because even the very first one, you know, he's talking being disempowered. But when you hear it, what you hear is a lot of you hear the dancing. You hear the sort mm-hmm. of it's actually his saying, oh, I wish I could do this kind of thing. It mm-hmm. has this wonderful, passion, actually.
Laurie Sims and Julien Tay will perform en blanc et noir on Wednesday night. Let's take a musical break and listen to the recording I referenced. It's from a duo called Combs and Scott.
Thank you.
That's the opening movement of En Blanc et Noir by Claude Debussy. One of the late pieces for two pianos that he composed. And if you'd like to hear the full piece live in concert, be at the Dalton Center Recital Hall on Wednesday night. Music starts at 7:30 and features Laurie Sims and Yulian Tay, the two professors of music at Western Michigan University, longtime friends. And this program has a lot of color to it, even though this piece is called In White and Black. It's part of the Live and Interactive series, so if you arrive at 7 o'clock, a half hour ahead, you'll hear some interviewing and behind-the-scenes descriptions of the pieces and the performers. So I guess we could talk a little about the Bernstein, since I got a sense that Julien... this theater piece means a lot. Like the original?
I love it, yes.
Yeah,
absolutely.
It's a true American classic.
Yeah. Which is funny because for the first time I saw it in Germany, I saw the movie, basically, and I just fell in love with it, and I just would sing all the, songs up and down, and we had this, compilation of forehand music at home,
I didn't know this.
Well, they were for more intermediate, but I loved playing those, America and.
So that's why you're so much better than me. No, just kidding.
I absolutely adore it, and it's funny now because I kind of remember how I felt when I heard it for the first time, and then my kids have been actually hearing it at home when I practice, and I've been listening to recordings just to help me prepare, and they already they sing it up and down, and they get very involved in the mumbo and snapping.
Mm-hmm. How do you say this? It's like he created incredibly attractive music, but it's not dumbed down in any way.
No, it's actually super sophisticated.
You can keep listening and listening and listening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's funny to me that I was teaching a student Copland Variations, which is considered, sort of a really big work for piano. But one would consider that classical music, high classical, early modern music. And as we were listening, it has all of these kind of dance elements. And I said, this is kind of like West Side Story. And the students didn't know West Side Story. She grew up in China. And so I said, I quickly, called it up on YouTube, and we were listening. And I just kind of dropped in to the recording. And I was listening to all of these orchestral interludes. And I thought, this is crazy, because this is modern music. This is it's not so different from listening to Strauss or something in terms of the counterpoint and the chromaticism and the sophistication of the orchestration and the rhythms. So it really is where American music meets, high European classical music, even though one of the big things that Bernstein said was that there was the idea in creating a perfect American music was to absorb the real Americanness of the rhythms, and that actually really harkens to jazz and African-American music. He just does it so well, and it's... I think that's the reason it makes such a lasting impression.
Puerto Rican music,
This
is
the
Sharks and the Jets.
I feel like it just transcends any of the sort of the definition, these narrow definitions that we have for all kinds of music. I think it's just, it's music, and it's just wonderful, and it's so enjoyable. It's incredibly complex to play.
It is very.
And to make that work for two pianos, where you have sort of more or less one color palette in some ways, and the intricacies of the counterpoint, and to just
there's
out
a big
all the
jazz fugue in the middle, and that's, it's tricky. And it's fun, but it's,
concentration.
Yes, rhythmic concentration.
Can you tell me anything about this arranger named John Mustow?
That I know of, he's apparently a really terrific pianist. I had a little bit of contact with him, and he was very receptive to the questions I was asking. What happened was that Bernstein I called the Bernstein Foundation. I had heard the LeBec sisters in a recording. They did a fantastic version that had percussion, and I was just all over it. And I thought, well, I'm going to try to, you know, I'll just go online and order this. And nothing was online. And so I called everybody I knew. And finally, it was Dan Gustin who said, just call the Bernstein Foundation. And they were super nice. And they said, oh, you know, Leonard Bernstein, God bless him, he would have just said, ah, yes, you know, go ahead and, you know, I put my stamp on this. So he had actually, I guess the LeBec sisters had asked the Costal, Erwin Costal, who had orchestrated large parts of the West Side Story, to make an arrangement specifically for them. And they had that locked down. And the Bernstein Foundation got so many requests for this music that they commissioned John Musto to make an arrangement. His arrangement sounds very much, pretty much exactly like, I mean, there's a couple different choices, but he does a beautiful job of orchestrating it for two pianos, and it is very pianistic. Even if it's difficult, you can tell that it was done by a pianist just by the way that he's arranged things. And it's very effective. And so I would love to meet him sometime, because I think it's he's very known for his compositions and also his arrangements.
Yeah. Yeah. I think some of those modern ensembles that have visited us from, like, on the Fontana series, mm-hmm. I've seen John Musto's name on those programs. So he's very active in new music as well as bringing great new arrangements out for people to play. Mm-hmm. Well, that pretty much covers the concert for Wednesday. Mm-hmm. Again, that's at 7:30. It's a ticketed event. You can get tickets at the door or ahead of time through the Miller Auditorium box office, milleraudatorium.com or 387-2300. And here at the end of our time together, I'd like to bring up that the fact that we just learned about losing one of the great musical forces, a true light in West Michigan. Her name was Phyllis Rappaport, and I think we're all keenly feeling that loss, because Phyllis, although she retired years ago, remained a constant presence, especially at School of Music events. We'd see her every on so many occasions. Could you bring to mind some thoughts about her legacy beyond that?
We would be here for many hours, but yes. So I actually am Phyllis's replacement at Western, and I didn't know Phyllis before I came here, but as soon as I arrived, one of the things that I always remember is that Phyllis just did everything she could to help me find my way in this community. And I remember when I gave my first recital here, and, you know, Phyllis's typical way would be to call her friends, her posse, and say, well, you're going, aren't you? And that was just how she, and that meant, yeah, you should show up. And the thing was, is that when Phyllis asked you to do something, you did it because, you know, 9 times out of 10, Phyllis had done you like 30,000 favors before that. She had this remarkable generosity about her. You know, if there was a way that she could help in terms of playing for you or teaching. Most recently, I was really struck. I was in Columbia earlier this year, and I sort of happened to notice all of my students were playing classical pieces. And I thought, well, I'm just going to ask Phyllis, who is, by the way, would have been 91 in just a few weeks. So she's a 90-year-old and 3/4. And she was just so excited about this and came in and, you know, taught her brains out for the whole week and was on this tremendous high. And my students just loved it. And so when I wrote to them, they were just, you know, they were really sad. And this is, you know, the phone has just been, you know, ringing off the hook, and everyone is calling and involved. And I can't think of a person in the music community or in the Kalamazoo community who has made such a long-term commitment and also as a great friend. Mm-hmm. If you were down, you got a postcard in the mail from Phyllis and you got the call or you got the special bread. She just came to my house 10 days ago after Christmas to bring me her beautiful fruit bread. She drove. She walked straight into my house as she always did. No knocking. Hello. Which we understood that was fine. So there will be many months and years, I think, that I hope that people will be remembering all these beautiful moments about Phyllis and maybe more than that, trying to call up her generosity and the things that she did and, you know, carry that forward, because that's, I think, the best you can do for somebody is recognize that and maybe change your own ways, because that was the thing about Phyllis.
She was a model.
She was a model in a million ways. In any possible way you could think about, she was such a rich person in her, just what she did for people, and really, really quietly. There were lots of things that she did and didn't particularly want the notification.
Kind
she
of just behind the scenes.
Yeah, she was a very behind the scenes person. Really, really remarkable. And we're the one super great thing is that we got to have this gigantic 90th birthday party last year at her birthday. And there we packed the Dalton Recital Hall. Yeah. And it was a beautiful thing for her, and I know that that was her send off. So I'm so glad that we could have done that.
People came from all over.
And if they couldn't be there, they wanted to have been there. I mean, it was usually something really big preventing them. So she will. I have a feeling she's the kind of person that you miss for a long time. She is, because she was just in many, her presence was really known in a lot of different ways.